Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
You know, this episode takes me back to high school and college when those badges of honors by the great athletes that were on campus had to, you know, the Letterman sweaters and the big letters and the Letterman's jackets. Well, where did this tradition come from and how did it go back in the day? Well, Timothy P. Brown of Football Archaeology joins us today to tell us about honoring the sweaters and jackets in our tradition of football history with footballarchaeology.com. Coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we are at that mark of the week. It's Tuesday. It's FootballArchaeology.com Day. And we have the author and the creator of FootballArchaeology.com, Timothy P. Brown, here to talk about another great tidbit he had coming from January. And Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Good to see you again and chat and looking forward to, you can't see, but I'm wearing a sweater and a jacket with my, you know, with my letter sweater and letter jacket from back in the day. I've got those on right now and wearing them proudly because I used to throw the ball over the mountain if you weren't aware of that before.
Okay, Uncle Rico, I'll get you that Napoleon Dynamite reference there. But Tim, that's a good segue into your tidbit we're going to talk about today, and it's titled Sweaters and Jackets. So this is a lot to do with the attire of people playing football back in the day. So we're interested to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, you know, so I think some of the most fascinating things about football are the equipment and the gear wore. And part of what's fun about it is just that there, in many cases, there are images that exist, either images of games or the team pictures that were posed in some photographer's office. And one of the things I really enjoy are the old catalogs. You know, one of the things I collect are old sporting catalogs. And so you see those peppered, you know, maybe once a week, once every 2 weeks, I've got something in my tidbits that includes an image from a catalog. So, I think most people are aware that if you're a fan of football history, that football, that in the early days, players often wore a fairly heavy sweater, pretty significant, big yarn, big threads, big yarn, heavy sweater. And oftentimes it had the school letter on the front. So if you were a Yale, you had a big Y in front. If you were Harvard, you had a H in front. And, so whatever else, whatever other letters that are out there. So that was very common. And so one of the traditions that began, and this is, 1890s, was, back then, if you look at most team schedules, like a Harvard and Yale, they kind of, like, similar to what happens now, but they kind of filled their early schedule by playing what they would have thought of as minor opponents, and then they kind of saved their best game and their best plays and their best players for the big games at the end of the season. So if you were on the team and you played, and if you played for Harvard and you played against Yale or you played against Princeton, And at the end of the year, you got to keep the sweater that you wore in the game, which had the big H on the front of it. And so that became a tradition. So, you know, I mean, I'm old enough to remember the days when there were no, you know, you couldn't go to the local mall and buy athletic gear, and there was no internet either. So, you know, you couldn't. So athletic gear, team gear simply was not available. And so if you were able to get your hands on team issued clothing from a college team, whether you played on the damn thing or not, that was pretty cool stuff, you know, because, you know, you could strut your stuff. You had this pretty neat team gear walking around. And people who knew that you had this, that you had gotten that gear. So it was the same thing with these guys. You know, they walked around campus, and everybody knew that if you wore this particular sweater, that you had played in one of the games. And in fact, early on, a lot of the colleges would, if the Y was a certain shape or had certain flourishes for football, the basketball team or the crew team or whatever else, especially the teams they considered minor sports, they didn't get to wear exactly the same Y or the same H. They had to wear some, you know, they got something else, and or they smaller letters. And so, you know, it was just this whole thing. The football guys got to wear the football sweaters. So anyways, that all worked fine for, you know, maybe a decade or two. And then it became a thing where obviously football gear then started changing, but also, you know, it's like nobody wanted to, you know, you couldn't wear the big heavy wool sweater all year round. So they started modifying the letter sweaters to become something that you might wear at appropriately in some kind of social occasion. So it was lighter, as cotton, with it had pockets, it had buttons, it was a cardigan, whatever, right? So it was just, they started making these sweaters be more into a true award and a separate piece of gear or apparel than the actual piece that you'd worn on the field. And they, you know, they also started doing charms and blankets and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, basically, and then by like the 1920s, they moved to, a lot of the sweaters had like an emblem. So if you were the Tigers, you might have a patch near one of the pockets that was a tiger, you know, had the head of a tiger. If you were the Lions or whatever, you know, whatever team you were, the Trojans, you had some kind of patch in addition to, you know, the letter sweater or the letters. And then they also, it was in that kind of time period where they also, they had numerals, you know, so like by 1905, I think it was Harvard that had the first numerals. But you know, that was, if you played as a freshman, you were on the freshman team, and you were on the team that was going to graduate in 1908, then you could get a sweater and wear just your numerals on the sweater, right? No letter yet, just the numerals, which I think everybody, you know, is familiar with from the high school days. But so anyways, that kind of stuff just went on. And then eventually in the 1930s, we got to the point where really, I don't think for any particular reason, but then the sporting goods manufacturers, who were very happy to sell as many damn sweaters as they could, they started selling jackets as well. So they designed these jackets. And the early ones didn't really look like the, you know, kind of leather sleeved, and I don't even know what wool, I guess it was, you know, the, you know, kind of the, I don't know, you know, well, the traditional letter jacket, right?
Right. Yeah, I think it's wool on the mid part, the midsection.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, anyways, I mean, they started selling those they started marketing them in the early 30s, and then they became popular, and for a while they were satin, but, you know, so anyways, it's just one of those things where the jackets basically kind of replace a sweater. Now, when I was in high school, there were still guys who had this thing called the Cardinal Club, So it was like the Letterman's Society or whatever. And so there were still guys who would buy the Letterman sweaters and wear them periodically, but it was pretty, very much, you know, I don't think of any of my class wore them, but there were, you know, some of the older guys who did. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was just, it was one of those things that faded out, but it, almost everybody wore a letter jacket, you know, and then it became a thing where, you know, the marching band has them and, you know, it's become this much more democratic sort of thing instead of being this elite award only for the football players, and everybody else has something less than that. Now it's become much more of a widespread award, which I just find, you know, whatever. I find that kind of interesting.
Yeah, so. that makes me think of a story I heard with Amos Alonzo Stagg, the great coach at the University of Chicago, and he would give out a blanket like you talked about earlier that had the, I guess, a C on it for Chicago. Yeah. to the seniors that played in whatever the big game was. And what his things that he would tell them, and I guess he practiced this, if somebody would go professional, which he was dead set against professional football, if one of his former players would go and play professional football, he would ask them for the blanket back. That was sort of their punishment. And, yeah, you know, yeah, I was reading it somewhere. There was people that like dreaded it, didn't want to lose their damn blanket because it was just such a discrediting, dishonorable thing to do to Coach Stagg that they wouldn't play pro football and, you know, probably made more money at being a banker or something than playing football back then anyway. But it's amazing how life of their own.
So I think he established blank, and most schools that there's still schools that award blankets today. And that was a separate kind of an award because any fool could win a letter for one season. The blanket was for somebody who earned three letters, or, you know, he had won the award three or four times. And yeah, so I mean, he started that in like 1902 or something. I've got the program from the 1911 Order of the Sea ceremony at UChicago. So, and that was, I think, the eighth one at the time. So it's it's funny, just as many things as a guy like Stagg came up with and innovated on the field, he also did some things off the field, like, you know, blankets and the first Letterman Society, which effectively was what the Order of the Sea was.
Fascinating stuff. It's a great part of the game that's off the field, but it's it's very interesting indeed to look at. And have you seen any of these like old sweaters, like in anybody's collections or anything, that some of these from 100 years ago or like this 1910 you pictured?
So, you know, there's some folks that I, you know, are friends that I correspond with, and we train information. And yeah, so some have those old items, and it's, I mean, they are very rare. They're difficult to take. And it especially it's one thing to have like an old sweater and not to make fun of an Otterbein or somebody like that, but, you know, there's lots of small little liberal arts schools all over the country that, hey, that's cool. And a lot of people would love to have an old sweater like that in their collection. But if you got a Harvard or Yale or somebody like that, you know, that's a big time deal. Those are thousands of dollars for items like that. You know, easy. So just depends on condition and, you know, provenance, all those kinds of things. So it's they can be very, very valuable.
I bet they are, especially if you keep them away from the moths for over a century. That's always a good thing too, keep the value up.
I only have them in pictures. I do not.
Closest thing I've ever come to is like going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame and seeing, you know, a 1920s, you know, like Red Grange or somebody from the Canton Bulldogs or one of their sweaters there, you know. So you're talking 10, 20 years earlier in what you're talking about. So can't even imagine that. So, hey, great stuff as always, Tim. Now, the listeners would probably love to enjoy these tidbits every day as well. Maybe you could give them some information to share the tidbits with them as well.
Yeah, sure. So the best way to get the tidbit every day is to follow me on or subscribe to my to footballarchaeology.com. If you do, you'll get a tidbit at 7 o'clock Eastern every day via email, so it'll have the contents of the story there. Also, you know, send out 2 to 3 times a month, I send out kind of longer form articles, as well as each week I send out a link to this to our podcast. And then, you know, alternatively, you can follow me on Twitter. Football Archaeology is my name, or at FOF Strife. So either way, whatever works for you. But if you subscribe, at least you know that you're going to get it, and you can pile them up and read them on the weekend when you've got more time.
Good deal. Multiple ways to get the tidbits, and hopefully everybody will take advantage of that and you know, read Tim's work each and every day, because it's very interesting stuff, and the pictures are just out of this world. Some of these images, like the one from this catalog from 1910 that we talked about today with the sweaters pictured in it, it's a picture's worth 1,000 words, and definitely is in these cases with the tidbits. So Tim, thank you very much for joining us, and we will talk to you again next week.
Thank you, sir, and we'll look forward to next Tuesday.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, it's found right here on the Sports History Network.